I'm going to actually take, I think it's explain the first parak myself. I'm going to take just a little more on than usual in the Chazara and explain it clear. I won't be, of course, adding as much as I would normally add, because we haven't got 45 minutes, but I want to at least explain it minimally, fully, and clearly, so that also for you and also for me, because I thought I would do a recording, but I didn't get a chance, so I'm going to use this as the recording for the website, because people are using that for the first chapter of the Ma'ariv, and anyone's listening to the tape, so don't panic that the first segment, the first chapter in the Chazara, and the first chapter in the recording is identical, just for this one parak. You shouldn't panic that we didn't. So we're talking, we're starting in Maseches de Ma'ariv, parak Rishon, the first chapter of Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah. Okay, so the word de Ma'ariv, just for the background, means literally, what is this? What is that? Duh, this, my, what is it? Because it refers to produce that we're uncertain about whether the proper hafrashas, the proper tithes, were taken from it. The Gemara in Sota Memches says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did a survey in his time at the beginning of Bayasheni to see whether or not Amoratzim actually take hafrashas. He found that most of them do, and essentially all of them do take Truma Gedola, but when it comes to the other Maestras, it's not so certain that all of them do. So he said that at a suffix, anyone who's an Am Aretz, meaning by definition someone who isn't formally committed to doing the proper afrashas, so we have to treat their food as damai, and we have to take, it has certain leniencies, because they probably did indeed take it, this food probably is properly tithed, but in case it wasn't, we have to remove certain parts of it again. Specifically, we have to get rid of the miser, trumas miser, because the trumas miser actually has the status of like truma, it belongs to the kohen. I'm going to carry with it, according to everyone, a misa b'day shemaim. Now, the Amoratzim apparently didn't think that it was critical to get rid of the trumas miser if they didn't take miser first. So they figured if miser wasn't taken yet, it hadn't become trumas miser, but indeed it's not true. So we have to get rid of that. And also there's miser sheni, the second tithe, which has to go to Jerusalem, since that food has to be eaten b'tahara. So you have to redeem the kedusha of the miser sheni out of the my produce onto a coin, mesefik, so that you'll be able to eat the food properly. The other hafashas, specifically miser, and when relevant, Maeser Ani, those are really financial obligations, and therefore we have a principle, Hamoti Mechavero Alav Haraya, who wants to take something from his friend has to bring proof that the burden of proof is on him to show that it belongs to him, let's call him the plaintiff. So in this case, since it's a demai, no one will know, and no one can know whether or not it really is there, the Maeser and the Maeser Ani, so the Levi or the poor person will not be able to bring evidence, so you as the owner are allowed to eat it. Okay, I'm not going to go, if I would have given this shiur normally, I would have gone through the whole system of hafrashos from beginning to end, but that's all I'm saying for now, because we're doing a half chazara and half first time for the first parak. There's no obvious structure to demai, as far as I can tell, so I can't really give you much of a guide there. And as far as halach lemaisa, apparently the Chazon Ish says that all of demai doesn't really apply b'zman hazeh, because it's just not sociologically true. What Yochanan Kohen Gadol found in Bayasheni, that most Amoratzim, you know, they did, but they didn't. It's just not the case today. Today, either people do or they don't. And it's so if you bought something from a person who is dubious, have taken a freshness, you'd be taking a freshness under the normal halachas of Safek or Vade, whatever it would be. Okay. Fine, very good. So now, the first Mishnah deals with produce that is exempt from the halachas of demai, the halachas of demai. It's actually a machlokas, exactly what's referring to in the Gemara. We're going like Rish Lakish. We're talking just about demai throughout the whole parak, and we're going to be allowed to eat these foods because they really typically hefker. These are like invaluable foods that are not valuable, and therefore most of them are just grown wildly. And as we learned in Peah, food that grows wild is exempt from the madnas naniyim. So here, although we don't know for sure whether or not it came from an ani who tended to a crop, but probably it didn't. And yesterday, someone asked about sfeik sfeika, and I was trying to think, I was like saying, I'm sure we'd learned it, but I couldn't remember where, now I see why, because it's in the first parak, which we didn't learn together. So I'm going to explain the concept of sfeik sfeika very briefly here, because this is the sfeik sfeika that we've seen so far. Sfeik sfeika means, like, we'll translate it as a double doubt. And the halacha is, when it comes to you have a double doubt, the sfeik sfeika, you are allowed to be lenient. So there's two doubts here nested one on top of the other. The first is, we're not even sure that this is, that this food is chayiv in Maaseres, because it's probably from Hefker. So it's a doubt. If there was ever an obligation to tie this, that's called a suffik. It's a suffik of this stuff. Right? We're not sure if it came from most Hefker stuff, or if it came from the miyut, the minority that would be required in Demai, in Hefrashas, excuse me. And on top of that, even if it did come from produce that was obligated in Hefrashas, we have a second suffik, which is maybe the Amaratim Amarats who tended to it didn't take the Hefrashas. That's what we said. We said most of them do. So you have a suffik number one, if it was even obligated, and even if it was, you have a suffik number two, well, maybe the guy did it. That's called a sfeik sfeika, like a double doubt. And in such a case, you're allowed to be lenient. And the poor fellow who wanted to hear the Pshat and Sfeik Sfeika is walking the door, so I've listened to the tape. Okay, so here are the actual particular fruits that are exempt. Hakalin Sheba Demai, the things which are lenient, makel and demai, in other words, you don't need to take the Hafrashas Mesafik with these foods if they were bought from an Amaretz. Hashisin, wild figs, Vaharimin, lotus fruits, it was radin, sorb apples, ubenos shuach, white figs, ubenos shikma, sycamore figs, ubenovlos, hatamaros, venovlos hatamara. We actually had this in the sixth parak of brachas. Remember, things, these are like they fell from the tree early. Vagufnin, these are grapes that didn't ripen properly, so you left them till late. You didn't pick them the first time around. They're like late harvesting, late ripening grapes, and they're second quality. Vahanitpa, capers. Fine. Ubi Yehuda, and in Yehuda there are other foods which I guess in general are considered not very valuable. Amongst them, ha'og, that's sumac fruit. We also saw it in the peah. Ba'chometz sheba Yehuda, and the chometz, the vinegar of Yehuda. Now the pshat here is, the base of Mikdash was situated in Yehuda territory, and there was a special nes that happened when the base of Mikdash was standing, that the vinegar wouldn't go bad. Excuse me, the wine that they used in the base of Mikdash, the wine that grew in Yehuda wouldn't go bad as a miracle because of its use in the base of Mikdash. So all wine never went bad in Yehuda as a miracle when the temple stood. So they couldn't make vinegar from wine because it wouldn't go bad. So in Yehuda, when the temple stood, instead to make vinegar, what they used is something called temed, which basically means temed, which basically they took like the grape skins, the grape seeds, and then like they fermented that to make wine. And really, secondary quality. I think arak from aniseed. But anyways, so whatever it is, this temed is like, it's like not very, it's not, it's low quality stuff. And so again, either they got it from Hefker, or in the first place, people abandoned their grape seeds, or alternatively, it's so worthless that they just, they didn't bother taking the hafrasha from it. Okay, but Bizman, even once the base of Mikdash was destroyed in Yehuda, that didn't apply anymore, and certainly today. But kusbar is coriander. That's what was described in Rashi there about what the man looked like. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that was in the land of Yehuda, the region of Yehuda. This is Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Kol ha-shisin paturin. He says, yeah, I agree that all shisin, we saw before, those wild figs, they're exempt, chutz mishel dufra, except for from a fig tree that produces two crops per year. Those are more valuable, and people wouldn't, those kind of figs wouldn't be left in Hefker. And also, kol ha-rimin paturin, all like the lotus fruits are also patur, I agree. Chutz merime shikmona, except for the lotus fruits that come from Shikmona, it's a place near Haifa. I guess they're very nice over there, high quality. And kol b'no shikma paturos, and same goes this sycamore fig, fruit, are exempt, he agrees. Chutz mishel hamustafos, except for those which like burst open, those I guess are extra tasty, and people harvest those and then leave them to Hefker. But the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. Okay, now Mishnah base deals with the leniencies of the Maaser Sheni that's embedded inside the Demai. Maaser Sheni has a number of halachas. We've seen this a few times already. It has to be eaten in Jerusalem, it has to be eaten in Tahara. If you can redeem it, then you have to add a chomesh to it. It can't be eaten when you're an onen, that means when you're in the first day that a person's karov relative dies, and the night also midorban, you can't eat Maaser Sheni. And then there's also, you have to destroy it in year 3 and year 6. And when you do destroy, it's the Bior. Excuse me, I should really say it after year 3 and after year 6, which means before Pesach and year 4 and year 7. And when you do destroy it, you have a special declaration you say. You say, you know, I did everything exactly like you told me to do it. A special, it's called Vidui Maestros. Okay, so there's many leniences when it comes to the Demai of... to the Maestro Sheni that comes out of the Demai. So, Hademai, the Maestro Sheni of Demai, Ein Lo Chomesh, it doesn't require adding the fifth part, i.e. 25%, because even Midoraisa, adding the Chomesh is not Ma'akev. In other words, if you, we saw already in Peah, if you redeem the Kedusha of Maestro Sheni onto a coin, but you don't add the Chomesh, it still works. It works. You owe another 25%, but it didn't. 25%? 25%? I know, because Chomesh translates as a fifth. We discussed it before. It means a fifth part. If you have, it's worth $4, you have to add a fifth dollar to it. That's a shot. Okay? So, the Ein Lo Bior, there's no obligation of Bior. That's the destroying it in the fourth and seventh year of the cycle. The Ne'echal La'onen, and an Onen, someone who's lost his relative in that first day, is allowed to eat Demai, again, because we're treating it as doubtful that it's was obligated anyway, because most Amaratzim do take Dafrashas. V'nichnes v'yushalayim v'yotzi. This is a separate lahalacha. It means you can bring it into Jerusalem, it can go into Jerusalem, and it can come out again. Because when it comes to Maaser Sheni, normally we say there's a funny lesson that the walls of Jerusalem like are kolet, like they hold on to the Maaser Sheni, meaning once it's in, you know, it's like a lobster trap, can't come out again. But that's not true when it comes to Demai, where Mekel, you're actually allowed to take it out of the walls and bring it back in the second time. Ma'abden es mi'utu bedrachim, and although when it comes to Maaser Sheni of Vadai, you have to protect every last drop of it, even if you know, we're under pressure, or you might have lost something, you have to look for it very stringently. Here, if a little bit gets lost, ma'abdin es miuto, you can let a little bit of it get lost, bedrachim, on the way, if you needed to, or you inconvenience, whatever it was. V'nos la'ama aretz, and you're allowed to give it to an ama aretz. When it comes to Maaser Sheni, usually, Maaser Sheni has to be eaten b'tahara, and amaratzim are suspected of being tame, so you shouldn't be allowed to give them Maaser Sheni, because you know you're causing the Maaser Sheni to become tame. But they were lenient when it came to Maaser Sheni of Demai because of the same leniency as before. We didn't make it extra difficult on them. But we add on V'yochal Kenegdo. If you do give food that's Maaser Sheni to an Ani in Yerushalayim to eat, you have to eat an extra amount of food with the stringencies of Maaser Sheni equal to the amount that you gave him. So if you gave him an apple, you have to eat another apple, Betoras Maaser Sheni. Like as a hashlama. Now, exactly why that's the case is a big question mark. There's no good reason intrinsic to it. There's no magic. You're not making anything up. You gave it, it's gone. You can't turn the new apple into a Maaser Sheni apple. So the Chazon Ish suggests maybe it's just to inhibit people from using this as a blanket loophole. In other words, if it costs you something, you got some skin in the game when you give away your Maaser Sheni, you'll be less likely to just give it all away to Niyam. You'll be more hesitant too because it's going to cost you. A suggestion. Umachalano so kesef al kesef. You can transfer. Remember, you're taking the kedusha of Maaser Sheni and putting onto a coin. Let's say a silver coin here. So normally, when it comes to real Maaser Sheni, you can't take that coin and then transfer the kedusha from silver coin A to silver coin B. You're not allowed to do that. Period. Only case would be if, let's say, it's a different currency and that the new currency is accepted, the old one isn't. So then you could put it over, but otherwise, from silver to silver is forbidden across the board with Maaser Sheni that's Vanai, and even from silver to copper, two different kinds of coins. Copper is considered more like a commodity than like money. That even only can do b'shas adchak in a pressing situation, but when it comes to Maaser Sheni of Demai, it's more lenient. And mochalan also kesef ala kesef, you can take from kesef and put it onto another piece of silver. Nechoshes al nechoshes, or from one copper to another piece of copper. Kesef al nechoshes, nechoshes al peros, you can take from kesef silver down to copper, even though copper is just a commodity. And even nechoshes al peros, and even take from copper coin, and then so you had your apple that was your Maaser Sheni, you redeem it onto a coin, you can then redeem that coin back onto a new apple, which is not the case in Maaser Sheni Vadai. There, you only can use that coin to buy food if it's in Jerusalem for eating. But here, you can just totally commoditize the Kiddush and switch around even to a fruit. The next word, there's two different girsos. It says, ubilvad, so long as sheyachzor v'yifte es aperos, as long as you dafka redeem those fruits back onto money and then take that money to Yerushalayim and then use money to buy fruit in Jerusalem. And others take the word ubilvad out. The reason why is because if you put ubilvad in, it makes there be some kind of extra stringency that wouldn't actually exist by Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni that's vaday, you're not supposed to do this, but if you did do it, that fruit, you wouldn't have to redeem it back onto coin and then go to Jerusalem and buy this another time. But here it would come out you would. Many take it out, the Rav included, but the Rambam learns that the Rambam learns that you must take this fruit to Jerusalem, the very fruit that you, the halach is, the fruit that you redeemed on, you have to take that very fruit, not redeem it onto coin and bring it to Jerusalem. That's Rav Meir. The Chum Omrim Yalu Aperos V'yochlo B'Yushalayim. The Chum say, you're allowed to go to Jerusalem if you want to and take those fruit with you, but you don't have to. Okay, fine. Mishnah Gimel. Okay. The next two Mishnayos basically run us around the entire Shas. And I really lucked out when I have to give it the first time because there's a lot to be said here. Now, Mishnah Gimel, basically the issue is when it comes to food that's demai, so you're only allowed to, the stringencies of the suffix only apply if you're going to eat the food. Remember, demai, rove of demai, most of demai, is mesukan, has been cleaned, is ready to eat. And midoraisa, from the Torah's perspective, if you have a mixture and you have a rove, you can go after the rove. So you should be allowed to eat. Demai should carry no restrictions. So we've checked, most amaratim do it. The rabbis made a stringency and said, out of suffix, we want you to treat demai extra carefully and do a second round of out of suffix hafrashas. But that's only applying that the food's going to be eaten. If it's used for other purposes, then you're off the hook. And here are those examples here. Halokeach lezera. If you take your demai and you're planning on using it for planting. So instead of eating the apples, you're going to take the apple seeds, right? So then you don't, if it's demai, you don't need to take hafrashas first. When it comes to real tevel, we saw this machlokas in Peah, right? With Rabbi Akiva, but bottom line is, midoraisa, that's the machlokas there, but midorabanan, for sure you have to tithe your seeds before you plant them, but you're off the hook when it comes to demai, because you're not eating it directly. Villa behema, and similarly feeding your behema, you're allowed to feed your behema demai. Normally, remember the obligation, you're allowed to, once you've done gemar malacha, you can't give your untithed fruit and foods to a behema. Remember, once you've done the meruch, here you're allowed to. Here you're allowed to. Provided, I should point out, that you didn't first acquire it for your own eating. If you first took the food thinking you're going to eat it and then change your mind, I'll give it to my animals, the obligation to take hafrash is already set in. But if you, from the outset, acquire this domain thinking it's animal food, no obligation is there. Kemach la'oros, and flour for skins, part of the tanning process in preparing leather hides is you dry them out with flour in those days. So you're destroying the kemach, so you're not eating it, so you're allowed to do it. I should point out that midoraisa, even tevel is allowed to be used not for food, and not the flushes aren't taken from it, provided that you aren't getting benefit from its destruction. So these examples here in the Mishnah are things that you're actually getting benefit from the destruction of the food, which would be usher by tevel, but it's lenient by the mind. So, for example, you're actually destroying the kemach by using it as a whatever it is, an absorbent, right? And shemen l'ner, the next case, you're burning it. You're burning the demai oil. Again, you're allowed to do that. If it was tevel, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. Shemen l'suchbo es akelim. If you use the oil to grease up, to grease your different utensils. Pater mina demai, all those things, you're not eating it. You're pater from all the stringencies of treating the demai out of suffix. I'm calling them stringencies, but really demai is leniency. Everyone understands that, right? This demai midoraisa should be totally lenient, and then the rabbis made some stringencies, but they're less stringent than regular tevel. Okay, mikziv ulahalan, and from kziv and farther north, Chziv is the same as Achziv, as in like Nachal Achziv. If anyone wanted the base tefillah camping trip, we went to this Chziv, but the street Chziv is named after it. So that place is up north, and although that region and farther north was captured and conquered by Yehoshua when he came in the first time, so it had Kedusha. When Yehoshua left, Klal Yisrael left in the Galus Bavel, so the Kedusha that was invested in Israel also went with it. And didn't come back, the Kedusha wasn't reestablished here to obligate Eretz Yisrael and the mitzvahs of that are totally barred to depend on the land until the Ole Bavel came back. When the Ole Bavel came back, so they only got up as far north as Chziv. So farther north than that is considered not halachli and doesn't carry the obligation midoraisa of hafrashas. Midorabanan, the rabbis said everywhere around here where Jews were living, they wanted the hafrashas taken. Midorabanan, that includes, let's say, most of Syria, most of Iraq, where Bavel is, Egypt, and Jordan, where Jews had spread around, they were obligated, but only midorabanan. So, since only midorabanan, they were lenient. If the food came from north of Chziv, you wouldn't have to take hafrashas from it if it's demai. Okay, now, these are examples, these next four things are examples. Well, for one reason or another, we assume that the Ani would have been more, the Amaaretz would have been more punctilious with his demai, more careful with his demai, for whatever reason. So here are the examples. Chalas Amaaretz. Chala, we've learned already, is the gift that you give from your dough to the Kohen. So that chala of the Amaaretz, it's given to the Kohen. The Kohen doesn't have to assume that he got Tevel. The Kohen can assume that the Ani was good to the Kohen and wouldn't mess around. You don't mess with the rabbi, so they would tithe it properly. Vaha Maduma. Okay, Maduma is, we saw once before also, it's when Truma gets mixed up back into a pile of Chulin. So normally we say, there's Bitul Barov, right? But Maduma is a case where you have a mixture of what's called yavesh, of dry objects that are like mixed up. So you have like, I don't know what, a hundred grapes, and one of the grapes was the truma grape, and it fell back in. So now you only have 99 grapes against one tevel grape. So when it comes to truma, we have extra trinity, you need to have more than 99 against one. It's actually machlokas if it's 100 against one or just 99 plus against one, but either way, right? Since Truma's mice is only 1%, so you have 99 against one. So if that falls back in the pile, the whole thing is called meduma. That's what the word means, meduma. It's like a dubious mixture that contains in it Truma, and a Yisrael cannot eat it, because a Yisrael cannot eat Truma. So it's given to the Kohen. So what happens if the Kohen got this meduma, but the chulin, 99% of it, is actually demai? Does he have to worry that demai is untithed? And the answer is no. We are assuming the Amaaretz wouldn't go selling his meduma to the Kohen without first being masakne properly. Then it's permissible. Then it's like considered batal. Truma is batal, and you're allowed to eat it. You can't. Yeah, that's always the case. Right. All iser. You can't mevatel iser l'charchila. What? Okay. Well, after the class, we'll answer questions. Yeah. Now. Okay, the halakuach bekesef ma'aser sheni. When you go, that which is acquired with the money of ma'aser sheni, what does that mean? When you go to Jerusalem and you bring your ma'aser sheni coins to buy the food there, so, and you're buying it from an Amaretz, we assume the Amaratzim who recognize this food is going to be, has a special status of ma'aser sheni, has kedusha and so on, they're not going to sell you, then they're going to take extra care to make sure that the food they're selling is properly tithed. Right, because it's properly used. And Ushiyori Menachos. A mincha is a flower offering. There's two kinds of offerings born on the base. I mean, there's zvachim and animal offerings. Menachos are like the flower-based offerings. So normally what happens is you make like a, there's lots of the kinds of menachos, but you make your pancake or whatever it is, loaf, whatever, the matzah thing. Then the Kohen takes what's called a kamitza. It's like that much. It's like what fits inside my fist minus my pinky. And that goes as a offering, and the rest the Kohanim eat. So what's left of the mincha, of the, let's say the pancake, you know, the offering, whatever it is, so that the Kohen eats, and that is called shiurei ha-menachos, the leftovers of the menachos. The Kohen can assume that if an Amar is going to bring food to the base mikdash, the korban, he's going to give proper tithes first, so he's allowed to be lenient, and it's peturim and a demai. All these four things are exempt from the chashash of demai. Now, shemen arev, pleasant oil, the machlok is what it is, either, well, Beis Shammai is mechayven, Beis Shammai say whatever it is, you have to treat like Demaya, and Beis Hillel say no, it's pater. So two pshat on what shemen arev is. One is that it's balsam oil, like it's a pure perfume essentially, and the machlokus is if you have to worry about smells, as did that fall into the rabbinic stringencies on Demai, or just you're not eating it, you're just smelling it, so you don't have to not take off rashas. So that's the one possibility. The other machlokus, other possibility brought down by the Rav is that it's shemen arev is like olive oil mixed with myrrh and aloe and other spices, and you use it as like a lotion on your skin. So we have a general principle that sicha kashtia, like the anointing on yourself, is like comparable to drinking. Hence, for example, we don't anoint on Yom Kippur. But the question is if we apply the sicha kashtia principle when it comes to demai, or more lenient here, and that's machlokas b'tzilim beis shammai. Okay, very good. That's perek aleph. Okay, perek beis. My. Okay. Oh, sorry, I was getting excited. I thought I'd... sorry, I apologize. Okay, so these are more leniencies now of Demai, and also, again, we're running around Shas here. So, HaDemai is Ma'arvin Bo. You can use it to make an Eruv. So there's two kinds of Eruvin we're talking about here, either Eruv Chatzeros or Eruv Itchumen. What are these things? So everyone knows you can't carry on Shabbos, but the rabbi said, that's true, that's Midorais, that's only true in what's called the Rishus HaRabim, only in a public, really public place. And Rosh Hashanah Rabim is basically a big open area with a lot of traffic. Okay, we'll wait to Erevin to discuss the details. But if it's like a shared courtyard, like a public, it's like, it's really private, it's not an open area, it's got a big traffic through it. But it sort of seems public because it's not private, you know, it's like, in our English language, we would not call that a private area, if it's the courtyard to a number of houses, right? Or a cul-de-sac, let's say. A cul-de-sac is probably the best way to imagine it. So, even though Midoraisa, a cul-de-sac is not a Rishus HaRabim, but the rabbi said it sure looks like one, and people might make the mistake and think if I can carry in a cul-de-sac, I can carry in a main street. So, therefore, the rabbi said no carrying unless you somehow close off and unify the area. So, when we think of Erev, we always think of Erev first, like the strings and the poles around, but the real essence of an Erev, ironically, isn't the strings and poles. The essence of Erev is that there's some food that all of us have contributed towards, or each of us give, let's say, a loaf of bread. And then that food supply that we all have access to, like, unites us, because we all have equal access to the food, so we're all going to pass through this area. So that's what is like the glue which unites the different residents in the chatzer. So you can use, although normally, if the food is inedible, you couldn't use it to, people can't eat it, you can use it for an air of chatzeros, but here, since a person has a migo, he can make himself poor if he wanted to, so therefore, if you use demai as your air of chatzeros is going to work. An Erev Truman, something different, that is a separate issue, besides for carrying in Rosh Hashanah, you're not allowed to, your person, your body, can't go more than 2,000 amos outside of the boundaries of the city. It's called the Trum, okay? It's like 1 kilometer out the city. Not carrying anything, just can't go that far. You're supposed to have Shvisa, you know, resting in your place, and you can't go beyond. So when the city ends, that's where you have 2,000 almost from there. So the question is, if there's a possibility the rabbis allowed that you could determine ahead of time before Shabbos where like is the locus of your residency, where's the center of the 2,000 amma radius circle, right? Where is it? So if ahead of time you put a meal, an edible meal, for Shabbos in a location, let's say, for argument's sake, you know, 1,000 amos out into the field, and you say that's where my residency is for Shabbos. So now the circle that you draw around your home, that you have 2,000 amos in each direction around, is going to be from that food supply. So that way you can actually extend your range on Shabbos. So why would you want to do that? For example, if you want to go to your rabbi who lives 3,000 amos away in a different town, so you couldn't traverse that 3,000 amos wilderness, but if you make it, an Erev Tchumen in the middle of that area before Shabbos, you can walk the whole way through it. Okay? So, that only works if it's food that's edible for Shabbos, so we're saying Demai is allowed to be used for that. Okay. u'mishtatfin bo. This is shitufei mavos. It's really the same thing in concept as the Erev Chatzeros. This is a mavui, is like an alleyway that off of which many different chatzeros, many cul-de-sacs are built. So it's like more public-ish, if you will, although still assuming it's not along for, you know, open on both sides with through traffic, and so it's allowed to be carried in Midoraisa, Midorabon, and the rabbi said this looks very suspicious and a lot like a regular street, so you have to make, besides for the poles and the sticks, you gotta also, and strings, you gotta also have a food supply in the middle that unites it, and that's called Shitufei Mavos, the thing which unites, is Mishtatef, is like to partnerize, so to make a partnership with the rest of the people in the Mavui. Fine. Umavarchin alav, you can make a bracha on your demai. Okay, so one pshat, the rav's pshat, is that we're talking about birchas amazon. Normally, you can't make a bracha on things that are aser. It's a general good klal to know. You know, if you for whatever reason find yourself eating something that's aser, which you shouldn't, then you don't say a bracha on it. Okay, but there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Ubotzea berach nietz Hashem," like the thief that blesses is blaspheming Hashem, and like, you know, you're eating what you shouldn't be eating. Not nice. It's not a praise at all. So here, even though it's actually usher to eat if you're not a ani, but if you did it, so it's not that usher because you have a migwa. You could have made yourself eligible by making yourself poor by mafkering your possessions, and therefore you can make a bracha on it. Birchas amazon. Okay, others learn something about the kosher bracha, but okay, same general principle. Umezamin alav. They say the kosher bracha because the next halacha here is you can use demai to make a zimin. We actually learned this in the seventh parak of brachas, if you remember. You can, if three people ate demai food, that was a no-no, but it wasn't that bad. They could still make a zimin on it. Uma frishna so arum, you can do the hafrashas of your demai when you're naked. What's that all about? Because you can't take a bracha when you're naked, but there's no bracha to be made, so you can take the hafrashas, no problem, right? And also you can do it bein hashmashas. Ben Hashmashas means there's the time period between night and day that is like, its status is unclear, whether it's night or day. Now, normally when it comes to tevel, untied food, you're not allowed to tithe it on Shabbos, because that is looks like tikkun, like you're fixing something up, because you're repairing it to make it edible. So when it already misafik, when it comes to Ben Hashmashas, you can't tithe tevel, but since demai already is misafik, if it's even a problem, it's like it doesn't look so bad after all. And if you could make yourself edible able to eat it without having done the hafrashas, and therefore even during Ben Hashmashas you're allowed through the tithes, right? Ha im hikti ma'aser shen l'rishon, but if you were makdim and you preceded the ma'aser sheni hafrasha l'rishon to the ma'aser rishon hafrasha, that's, you're supposed to first take ma'aser rishon and then ma'aser sheni, hence they call it Ma'aser Rishon and Ma'aser Sheni. But if you didn't, so if it would be Tevel, that's no good. And what would happen is, although it works technically, when you're supposed to make the vidui on the Ma'aser, the beer of the Ma'aser, you're supposed to say, part of the beer has a vidui, you say, and I did everything like you told me to do, but that's a lie if you did it out of order, and you actually bevatel a love to take it out of order. But that's, so you wouldn't be able to make the vidui. But that's only if it's tevel. If it's demai, we're lenient again, and we say, "Ein b'kach klum." Like, there's nothing in this. Ein b'kach, there isn't in this klum anything. It's no big deal. No big deal. You can still do your vidui, and don't stress it. Okay. Shemen hagardi, a weaver who uses oil, sach be'etzbosav. They can use the oil to, like, you know, lubricate their fingers. That's permitted. I'm sorry. If you use it to anoint your fingers, that's chay b'demai. You have to take the fresh of demai first, because it's sichat kishtia, right? A gardi is a weaver. So shehagardi, that of the weaver, he can anoint his fingers, but he has to first take the demai, because it's sichat kishtia, right? The shehasorek, and as for the wool comber, nosin b'tzemer, who puts even a lot of it into the tzemer, and it's getting lost, patur min ha-demai. That's okay, because you're not eating it. So if you're going to use it in your skin, it's absorbed, you have to make the hafrashas first. But if you're putting it into the wool, it's not a problem. And the mefarshim asks, like, it seems kind of repetitive, and they answer, even a lot. That's what says nosin, you just pour it in, it doesn't matter. Okay, your skin, yeah. Okay, very good.